a ground crew.
Correct. What I've provided for you, Jose, is a summary of all the buildings on the Valhalla campus, the existing type of roof that presently is on the building, the year in which it was installed, and the expiration year of the warranty work. So, in essence, it gives you a snapshot. All the roofs that we're proposing to do are over 20 years. All of them are out of warranty. I know one of the questions that the board had asked was, how bad are the roofs? We've been patching them as we need to. Quite frankly, patching is a short-term solution. Tarps work out real well, too. But this is really a time when we really need to make sure that our roofs are sealed, that our roofs are tight. So what I've provided for you is a snapshot of the information that you would ask. So I figured I'd give it to you in a one-page summary. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer the questions.
Yes, and I guess, Mr. Harkin, you say it, because I know where you come.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just putting on my hat as Chair of Committee on Environment and Energy.
I knew that.
I noticed the first bullet you have is about energy codes and leaks.
Yes.
That's great, because we've asked about that before. Thank you.
Yes.
The other question I have, which we continue to broach, but we don't have to look at it in this committee, but allow me to raise it, and
we should
talk about it environment. Something that we really need to talk about seriously is assessing which of our roofs are appropriate for solar. And not that we necessarily have the money any longer to be building solar farms, but certainly there are companies that lease space to build their own, and it's kind of a win-win. We're creating solar power, and we, the county, are getting revenue. So have you thought about these? And just to put out as a formal request, let's have a conversation in the Committee on Environment and Energy on the big picture about all of our county.
Right, as we discussed previously at your committee, NYPA has gone out on an RFP with potential sites where they could actually house solar, where we can get a base rent. Playland parking lot is one of them. Mm. Valhalla campus is another location. So we're waiting for NYPA to digest the RFPs. They've already received the RFPs from like 50 companies or so.
Wow.
I meet with NYPA monthly, and I can have NYPA come up and brief the committee, your committee, on where they are.
Because
I've been asking
perfect.
The same question.
Okay, great.
Because first it comes down to which sites have prospective vendors identified as being optimum sites for solar. Number two, what would be the aesthetic look of how these things would look, because they're going to be there for a lot of years. And thirdly, the environmental consequences of solar. As you know, we put solar panels on our low rise. One of the things that we have identified is that White Plains Fire Department will not go up there when we have an alarm because those panels are all active. So we've worked out some issues. We need to work out some issues of emergency response, okay? And that has been an issue that we didn't really focus on until White Plains looked at it and said, oh, we're not coming up here if you have a fire. So we're addressing some of those issues. So. But NYPA, we've been using NYPA as our lead agency. They've been doing it throughout the county, as well as other parts of New York State. So, I've asked them at the last meeting to give me a briefing. They said they just received the RFPs. They haven't had a chance to digest it and find out what the rationale is. Clearly, if there's a monetary benefit to the county and we provide a useful energy savings, it's a win-win for everybody. So, we're waiting for that at this point. NYPA has taken on that initiative. All right, so. I would be glad to come back. I will have them do a presentation to both the committee and the full board at some point.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other members for both committees? Yes, Mr. Okay,
well, given that schedule, good morning, Commissioner. It seems to me, and Mr. Abinanti over the years has talked about this, meeting New York State energy codes and lead requirements is a nice statement. Fairly broad, what kind of lead requirements. I mean, we could put a roof up there, and some of the small roofs, the 2100, 2000, I mean,
it
seems to be the JLN next, unfortunately, is going to be there for a while, I would think. I mean, just the way the world works. And that's 40,000 square feet. Now, that lends itself to, a little more specifics, whether it's, you want to get fancy with a green roof and saving the rainwater and planting grass up there and all that kind of
stuff.
That
doesn't work. That's okay.
Yeah, well,
we've already done that. We did that in Hilltop.
Well, it may not, but the point is, and if you're saying if NYPA I think this committee needs to know that it was looked at, and it doesn't work. That's fine. It might lend itself to solar. It may not. But I think just to say it meets, I mean, I put roofs on my buildings. There's no energy code. I mean, you can put some insulation there if you want, but I mean, it's a little broad to say it meets all, you know, meets the building code for sure.
It's a little more than your buildings.
Yeah, well, but LEED requirements, you know, what level of LEED? So I think if in fact, as Leslie Harkin says, now out in NYPA, maybe if you think the smaller buildings, you know, we can go ahead, Mr. Chairman, but for the JLNX and maybe the central heating plant, until we hear from NYPA, or if you have on these, you know, show us what they said.
I would be glad to go through the larger buildings, okay, and go through a scenario of what is appropriate in terms of energy conservation.
Yeah, but what NYPA says is appropriate, because Pete's right. I mean, this could be done with no cost to the county. Whether NYPA would do it on a performance, you know, on a performance contract basis, or you know, sub it out, but until we have something in writing from NYPA, or if they did it 6 months ago, give you, I don't know how, Chairman. Some of these, I wouldn't want to proceed. Why would we vote on this and next month NYPA? Geez, we would have put we would have put solar panels up there. So why are we putting the cart before the horse?
Why not?
Well, you just said that NYPA is looking at this right now.
Yes, they have an RP they just received.
But I assume we're asking, being asked to vote on this and bond this and do this now, before NYPA, before we hear from NYPA. We might not have to bond this. Suppose NYPA says, we'll take the 40,000 square feet and we'll take care of it, we'll do it for you. You pay us out of savings. I mean, it may not work at all. I don't know. It may be a terrible idea, but until NYPA puts it right, that's a terrible idea. Go ahead and bond it and go do it. Why should this committee move now?
Marty?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Through the chair, if I may. Well, NYPA would not do the roof itself, would they?
It's if they're going to do the solar or other some kind, it may need structural. It may not be strong enough to do it. But
it's not about renting out the space for solar for an outside contractor.
Right, but NYPA would do an analysis of are there enough energy savings that the payback makes sense? And that's what the bottom.
There's never a payback on solar if you're doing it strictly for your own use. The payback on the low rise is several generations. We did it because we're setting public policy.
Right.
So if you're talking about solar for our own consumption, it never pays for itself. If you're talking about renting this space to an outside contractor to install on our behalf, and they sell whatever energy they can get out of it, and they do it for us at no cost, then it's a plus-plus for the county.
Well, it may be. It's a fair point. It may be, given the tax credits and given the, you know, given all the rules out there, you're right, for the government to do it, it doesn't make sense. But allegedly, hard point. If you get it into the private hands, at no cost to us, it does make sense. Well, that should be explored. That's a good idea.
But I think we still have to do the roof itself.
Right. Well, yes, but I think you want to know what you're doing, because you may have to make the roof strong. I mean, these are old buildings. Hopefully, they were built pretty good in those days, and you wouldn't need any.
We did the same thing. We put out our own contract for the low rise. NYPA put in the solar. We worked in conjunction with NYPA's contractor to make sure that structurally and logistically,
right,
that we don't put the cart before the horse and do it twice.
Okay, so you're saying, nope, NYPA has advised you that whatever they might do contracting, we can. There's nothing standing in the way of doing the roof now to be ready for that.
Correct.
All right, well, if that's the case, then fine. And well, I don't want that on the record, though, that that's the case. I don't want to find out. It's like Con Ed digging the road up after it's paid because they left something
out.
Okay.
We're past those dinosaur days, right?
Okay.
We meet with NYPA monthly to go over all of the NYPA projects that they're doing with Westchester, and I showed you the book.
Right, so they can look at the solar independent
absolutely
of it.
Absolutely.
Okay.
They're doing the county center right now. I mean, it's
okay.
Well, we meet monthly with their entire senior staff. This is not throwing darts in the board.
Okay, so we can do this now and
just like the slide for the pool.
and by the way, you just put it on the record. Mr. Wood.
I just wanted to make a quick point. The Capital Projects Subcommittee, when we looked at this, we understood from the Department of Public Works that these roofs were in very bad shape and that they were leaking and that they needed to have it done now. They needed to have this. And that's one of the reasons to ask the questions, President Leica. But I think the emergency situation is what actually drives this to get it done immediately.
But again, we will go through the issue of the energy issue with NYPA. It's not a problem, Marty.
You have what do you think of the? Let's see. You have the numbers in here. What's your sense of the market now? The cost per square foot to replace now what are we replacing them with? Not single ply.
The single ply membrane. The only time we've used single ply membrane has been recently. On the Liberty Garage in Yonkers. It's worked out very well. Previous to that, we had a problem with single ply because the previous couple of jobs prior to the one we just did at Yonkers, we had very bad experience of the ply not holding the warranty. Plus, these single ply roofs, typically the manufacturers give you only a 15-year warranty. On the Liberty roof, I actually bought an additional 5 years so that we get the 20 years that typically county roofs always have. So I bought the additional 5 years warranty on top of the 15 to give us the 20. This way we have the same snapshot of all of our roofs. But we'll look at each one in terms of where we stand. The smaller roofs, as you know, will probably be the three-ply. The larger, the single-ply works well on the larger surfaces, like the jail annex roof might be one of those. But again, if we do something with solar panels, the single ply is the single membrane is not something you want people to walk over. So before we endeavor on the larger stuff, we will check with NYPA to ensure where we are. We'll meet with Peace Committee. We'll meet with you, Marty. So it's not an issue.
But anything $40 a square foot approximately for this roof is that the ballpark number you're estimating?
That's the ballpark for a soft course, CM. It's okay. A turnkey cost.
Okay.
Keep in mind that the county pays everything prevailing wage. We don't do day laborers. I can get it done for $10 if you want to day laborers, but we pay prevailing wage. We check certified payrolls. We make sure that people get what they're entitled to. You don't have to use prevailing wage on your roofs, Marty. I mean, I do. So, I mean, you know, it's just it's the nature of the business. Laborers get $29 an hour with fringe benefits. They get over $42 an hour.
Let's see what the marketplace is like. $40 a square foot still seems expensive, but we'll see what the marketplace gives us.
Whatever it is, we've been getting some really good prices recently. But show you all the recent bids.
Okay. All right, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Please follow the budget agenda of budget members because we're going to alternate to prioritize them. And we're going to move right on to item 3149.
You
want
to move this?
Are we going to vote on this?
Yes.
So moved.
Motion. By Mr. Hart.
I'll second.
For budget and appropriations.
A motion second for...
So moved.
I'll second Ms. Myers' motion. And if we may, Mr. Chairman, for both committees?
Right.
For both committees, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. Opposed?
Thank you.
Right. And we'll move on to item... and follow the agenda, please. There is a purpose of this. 3149 Worcester WWTP roof.
Are we skipping 3135?
Yeah, for now.
Got it.
Yes.
I think they might be out here.
Trying to accommodate to hopefully save the commissioner's time.
I don't think our system's working.
Is not working, so we go to 3135 then?
But there's nobody else here. CEF, Labs and Research isn't here. Nobody's here. None of the people are here that are supposed to.
And the commissioner was here just for the roof?
That's all John had. Now we're supposed to do Tom Lawson.
There's a lot of DEF stuff.
And then DEF and Mary and
Oh, listen. I want the members to know that I'm trying to sometimes we have commissioners here, sitting here for a long time and
why
trying
we use this thing?
To be exactly I'm trying to be accommodating, but this is what happens when you try to accommodate.
Are we able to use this TV thing?
Sure. Yeah.
Why don't we do that?
The video conference is working. Absolutely.
Why don't we use that for commissioners?
For whom? Yeah, we should. I mean, I know that the committee coordinators in meeting with Lala, they have an option on using that for specific ones, especially the ones that aren't in the building.
Well, that's sort of what we're seeing here.
So who are you waiting for?
Tom Lauro.
Tom Lauro? Well,
no, somebody else has gone out to look.
None of the others have come in yet.
Labs and Research.
They should be on the
way. Given all recorded my talks.
Yeah. I can give an oral report on how I played golf yesterday.
And did you play well?
Did.
Yeah. What did you shoot?
Oh, that's an
under 120.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
What number is it?
We stood up.
32, 32.
Why do I feel it?
Second page.
All right. Chairman, this was the item that we committed regarding the...
Who are we looking for?
Project in...
Well, there's nobody here to talk about all of these budgets.
Okay, 3239 and
3240.
Did
we ask for somebody?
Yeah, they did. So then I said, why don't we use
Mr.
Williams,
there were several...
Is that a problem with you?
What are we skipping to?
We're skipping to 3239 and 3240.
And what numbers are they on the agenda?
13 and 14 on the budget agenda.
13 and 14, okay.
There were a number of questions, actually, that were raised at the last meeting, at the board meeting, that caused this item to be recommitted to the committee for clarification on those questions. One question relates to the IMA, and I think what we did is we attached the IMA, the initial legislation that was voted upon, that contained the IMA and the approval by all of the, it was unanimously approved by the Board of Legislators.
And it was a legacy project.
It was a legacy project.
Yeah.
And the second question was on whether it was a legacy project. It was a legacy project. It's in the budget, the legacy budget. That's the, and that's attached here with the document. And the third question relates to what was the quid pro quo. And there was a county affordable housing project which should have been identified at 20 East 1st Street that was approved last year at the same time as this project and was also mentioned in the county implementation plan as one of the tribal county projects. So all three of those questions with the documentation has been attached for all members of the Board of Legislators to review.
Mr. Jenkins? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think that one of the things that I'm going to just make sure to, the clerk is going to remind us all of is to have our the laptops available. One of the issues in being paperless is that sometimes we don't have all the backup in front of us to be able to whip it up and see. So if we had that, we would have known at the last meeting that the that this particular project was indeed a legacy project, that it already had its capital budget amendment approved as a legacy project, which is why it didn't need to come from the administration, that everything was already in order. So in that case, Mr. Chairman, I think that all the information is there. This particular item, when it was approved unanimously on the floor. So the time frame was December, late December, when we approved this particular project. And we also approved the New Rochelle Flowers with Legislator Mezano and Legislator
right.
Pinto
Flowers
at that same meeting.
Yeah.
So there was a unanimous agreement on this particular project. The act in front of us now is just for the funding for construction. So it was everything was in order. So, wait a second, Mr. So without that, Mr. Chairman, I think it's ready to just move forward to go back in front of the floor for tonight. And you know, certainly it's not my district, so I would not make the motion on that. But I think that would be the appropriate thing, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments from the members of both committees?
I just need clarification because it's part of the legacy program.
Yes, that
and the quid pro quo was affordable housing,
yes.
But it wasn't mentioned.
It was not mentioned in the.
So it was something that was done years prior
prior. No, it was.
And now we're putting it towards this.
No,
this is what it sounds like to me.
We should do it in fairness to Legislator McCarver wasn't here when we did this. The documentation in the original documentation in the Bond Act in the original IMA, it had all that information in it. So, you said that everyone has that information now, or did we not?
Yeah, the information is included in these documents.
Okay,
right
so
now.
We.
Is it in this 3239.1?
Yes.
Right,
yeah.
Because we. So it's all the documentation, the backup and support documentation is there. So it is not. It's not something that we're going backwards on.
Right.
For clarity, it is something that was already. It was done, but in the Bond Act that we moved forward with for the construction part. We did not reference all that material
right, exactly.
Because it wasn't really necessary.
Right.
It was already had an IMA. It already has a capital budget amendment. It's already part of the legacy program. It's already something that was identified in the capital budget for 2010, and at the bottom line was unanimously supported by all the members of the board.
Right. So, and I remember that was the closure. That was the closure of business last.
So year. Just for clarity, to Legislator Marcotte's point, last year then this the capital budget amendment was approved by this board last year.
Yes.
And it was done so unanimously.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And the IMA as well.
The IMA
included the reference to the legacy program. In addition to that, Mr. Chairman, most folks don't recognize that the legacy program has some specific items in it, especially for the cities and the places that don't have the open spaces. That was part of the legacy program's underpinnings, was to help to create open spaces. So. That's where we are.
All right. Motion by Legislator Williams. Is there a second?
Second.
For both items, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
We need a motion by the Public Works Committee.
So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. Mr. Chairman, now a motion for
Public Works.
Public Works.
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Quiet this morning, Mr. Chairman. You got to respond to the concerns. Yes.
We can do now.
Yeah, 3372.
This is.
Okay, 32.
3372.
Just go through the form.
We can do all these sewer
four, five, six,
oh, maybe nine,
okay.
Too.
Okay.
Nine,
so we're
10,
move
11.
On to items.
Nine and 10. Nine and 10.
3272, you said, right?
3372.
3372. Item four. Item four on the agenda and down the line, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. And. Please join us and introduce yourself for your record. Right? You know the drill.
I know the drill. Morning.
Morning.
I'm Marion Pompa, Environmental Facilities Associate Engineer. Items 33, 72, 73 are resolution to set a public hearing for the return of four parcels in the town of Portland to the Kingskill Sanitary Sewer District. First item is to set the public hearing, the second one is for the actual legislation. These parcels are being returned. They were removed in 1998 in the original removal of 3,400 parcels, and these parcels are petitioning to come back in the district, and this will have no impact on us. We have no objection to this taking place.
Members, Mr. Burke.
I'm ready to move that when you're ready.
Okay, I have a motion to both committees. You're in both committees?
I'm not.
Okay, for budget and appropriations, Mr. Burke.
Motion for Public Works.
I'll move if I have a question.
Okay. Second.
Okay, moved and seconded for both committees.
For purposes of all of these, just administratively, if we, so we can get into rather having the cart before the horse. The items before us, a motion, a second, we're on discussion for the item.
All right. Just go down through all.
So all of them,
and then just questions on any of them.
So that's the easiest way to take these up. So on this particular item, we have a motion, a second for both committees. We're on discussion now for this item. Mr. Gowski.
That's just sort of maybe a general question, but I guess when we try to do this, we take parcels out. I thought we sort of tell the property owners that once you're out, you're out. This was, I gather you said this was part of a very large 3,400
right.
parcels. So I don't know what that was, but the reason they want to come, I mean, do they have to give a reason? I mean, how does this work? Just wait.
Many times, the reason they come back in is the town either builds sewers, a developer comes in and builds sewers, or they weren't as far away as they thought they were.
I see.
Two of the parcels, sewers were built nearby. One parcel probably should not have come out of the district because the county trunk runs right down the street in front of them. And as I understand it, the house burned down. So they are going to rebuild the house. So in order to rebuild the house, they'd have to build a brand new septic system. So in this case, it makes more sense since the sewer's in the street to hook up to the sewer. The third parcel they're at is another house that they're going to tear down and actually extend the town of Cortland sewer 100 feet to hook up the property. So that's why in these instances they're petitioning to come back in.
Okay, because so there's criteria, whatever, we take them out, but now these meet the criteria to be in. Okay.
Correct.
All right, if I may, Mr. Chairman, move and second it for both committees. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, and again, since there are similar items, as Chairman Ryan mentioned, go through the list that you have and highlight them, anything in particular that you want to highlight on them, and then we do a motion for all of them.
Okay. The next two items, 3374, 3375, is to add two parcels in the town of Portland to the district. These parcels were never part of the district, and they're coming in order to hook up the house to a sewer that was constructed by a developer. Items 3381 and 3382 are a motion to add two parcels in the town of Yorktown to the Peekskill Sanitary Sewer District that were never part of the district. I believe one of these parcels, probably both of these parcels, are probably experiencing septic problems, and that's why they want to come in, but I don't know that for sure.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
Just as an FYI for me. They had previously had septic then.
Correct. They've had septic.
So when they do convert and attach to the sewer district, what are they required to do to the septic?
They abandon it in place. They pump out the tank, they fill it up with sand, or they crush the tank and fill the voids with sand, and they just kind of leave the fumes on the ground.
I see. And that's an effective
yes.
way of dealing with it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
To that point, Mr. Chair. So you're saying it must be pumped, though?
Yes,
so
it's pumped out of the ground. They pump it out.
I have it in my tank.
That's actually written in the sanitary code how they do it. It's very vague. They do say that they must pump out all pits to fill in the sand.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
All right, that brings us all the way down to 3382, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, this is more of almost a legal question. If someone's out there, a parcel's out there, and then the developer, someone builds, all of a sudden now a sewer line shows up and it's, you know, 30 feet away or something. Is this a discretionary action, or if someone comes in and says, I now, you know, I'm within 20, 30 feet, I fit all the criteria, do we have a mandatory obligation to accept them in, or is this still discretion? Even if the line runs by right by the house, can we just still say, well,
I'm not an
attorney.
So
really
it's
more of a legal question.
I think Mark and I could probably answer that. The town board decides. Nobody else does.
Yeah.
If the town board approves, it comes to us. Otherwise, you got nothing by right.
Right. No, but the town board, because, you know, there's some issues, and it may not, I'm not saying applies here, but there may be things out in the community that we haven't heard, some big environmental issue, you know, extension of sewers creates sprawl, creates more development, all these issues, and some people are against sewers because they don't want that development. Here, obviously, a sewer was built.
You said that, not me.
Well, I say a sewer was built, and it was built by a development. I mean, I don't hear any information from this area, so I don't know, but I'm just wondering, so the sewer is built, do we, and then the town gives the building building permit or says it's okay. I'm more curious. I've sat here for a lot of years. I'm curious, do we just, you know, have to say yes because it's right there, or do we have discretion? It's a legal question. We have discretion to say, even though the town put everything did it, it's our sewer district, and I don't know, we decide not to do it.
The county operates a facility. The town decides on zoning. If the town decides that it will permit the construction of a development, then the issue is, how is it going to be sewered? And the town makes that decision.
So
it's going to encourage a sewer hookup? Is it going to say, no, you've got to go on septic?
So they make
the town
sewer
makes
decision.
All those decisions.
Right.
And then, if the town has the bright idea of hooking up the sewer system and this board says, no, thank you, they're back at square one.
All right, so it implies that it's discretion. We could, in theory, say no.
That's why we're voting on it.
Okay, well, I'm just like, well.
And
we vote administratively, or we have a decision to make.
Yeah.
Well, and we asked the Department of a public works to make that decision for us, the public works.
The expert advice is it's not going to be a burden and the tax rate. I mean, they do all that, but again...
And capacity and stuff like that.
Sure. So, all right, I don't want to belabor the point, but I'm still... Is it or isn't it administrative? The commissioner's here, maybe the commissioner's department. I don't know. Is it a ministerial duty that we sort of...
Commissioner, you want to join us anyway, you're next. So maybe we can bring some clarity to this. And also, remember that the sewer districts are properly marked. So from our perspective, if it is within... And the town asked us to move it in. We could. The question from Mr. Rogowski, were you able to hear it all the way
over there? Yes,
okay.
I was. Uh-huh. I legally, and again, I would defer to the law department, but I don't think there's any legal requirement that if a sewer appears that they have to come into the district, they could still maintain their septic. It's really
once it comes to us, they don't have to, but if they make the request, they want to. The town makes its judgments.
And the department would tell you whether we have the capacity to accept them or not.
Okay.
So and then it's really up to
all right, so it's still our decision. All right.
And at this stage, we wouldn't make the request for the legislation if we did not have the capacity.
All right, but you look at all the technical stuff. The towns obviously make their judgments. They allow that development for tax revenues, whatever they want.
Okay. I guess a motion for federal appropriations at this time is in order for all the items that have been discussed.
So moved.
Moved by
Public Works. Second group for budget.
Motion by Public Works.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, if I may, Mr. Chairman, moved and seconded for both committees, all the items that have been discussed. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you so much. I guess that's the closure of the time. And thanks for the feedback. I mean, it's not such a thing as stupid question as far as I remember from college. And all of them. Sally, with Commissioner Laurel, take you back to which item we're going to go. Yeah. I'm sorry?
Number 3, 3149.
3149 members.
Yep.
I remember at least one legislator that was interested in being present for the auto mitigation program that will take place this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Yonkers Joint Plant. Mr. Burton, you wanted
to... What was the question?
No, you wanted to be present for the informational meeting.
Oh, there was a tour.
Yeah, well, informational meeting of the odor mitigation program that is taking effect.
Let's see, what
odor mitigation.
Odor mitigation. Oh, okay.
We had voted to approve this about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Was an investment.
Okay, and it will be held when?
Wednesday at the plant at 7 p.m.
9:22, 7 p.m., Yonkers Wastewater Treatment Plant.
Yeah.
Odor.
Bring your best clothes, please.
You're providing Tyvek suits?
Yeah, well, that way when you get home, we'll see if the auto mitigation is working.
Jose, just for the record, that last vote taken by the two committees jointly, just for clarity.
Sewer humor.
I love it.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. I'll wait. Just for clarity in the record, that vote... the vote also covered items 9 and 10, two parcels being added to Yorktown,
yes.
Both the resolution and the act.
Yes.
Just for clarity, there were no questions on those particular items, but that vote covered those two items as well.
Yes, sir. So that is... clear, Mr. Chairman. And I did ask, and I made sure as we were discussing them that I highlighted that the discussion took us all the way up to item 3382.
Very good.
Thank you for the clarification. So we went back to item
three.
Item 3149, Bondi SPC 11, Portchester. Wastewater treatment plant roof replacement. Well, I guess the roofs are popular this morning.
Okay. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
This is a project we set aside funding for. There's a larger appropriation and under review, but we're bringing forward one portion of it. As you see, for the roof on the structure at the effluent end of the primary settling tanks. This is where all the operating mechanisms are, the skimmers, and also helps us with access to the tanks for repairs and maintenance. The roof was put in probably in the late 80s, but it has shown a lot of deterioration. Some of the decking underneath the roof, the metal decking, have deteriorated to a point where there is actually a hole in that roof. So that roof needs to be stripped off completely, the metal decking repaired, and a new roof with insulation put on top. It's about 2,200 square feet, and I believe the request is for $105,000. It'll be a white roof according to LEED standards. Again, this is just really an operating building at the end of the primary settling tanks.
Any questions from the members? Mr. Argaski, the local representative of that area.
Commissioner, on the what is the current status? That whole plant hasn't been being rebuilt in the last couple of years. What's with that? What's this major?
Well, we've been rebuilding most of the equipment,
right?
But this is getting more to the facilities, the roofs. The windows are in good shape. The brick facades are in good shape.
But what's the status of the whole project, all the equipment? Is that done now? The last couple of years? Is that going to the tax levy now? Is there this major work done the last 2 or 3 years?
Well, we've done a lot of work rehabilitating the rotating biological contactors, settling tanks, thickeners, pumps. They're all in pretty good condition. We might see in another 5 to 10 years a start of a replacement for the RBCs because they will be 30 years old.
Well, I see. So you looked at those, you see, did not do a major work. You took a look at them and they were in decent shape.
They're in decent. We replaced some frames and we replaced some media, so we did some rehab.
Okay, I thought it was up for a major. I thought we had voted like $10, $15 million for a major. Yeah, we didn't do that.
Well, $10, $15 million doesn't go as far as it used to.
So you did spend that. Okay.
Wow.
I thought that was a major rehab.
All right. Any other comments or questions? Otherwise, a motion for budget appropriation is in order.
So moved.
Second. A motion for public works.
Did you move it?
No.
Okay, Mr. Williams, move it. Who second for budget appropriation?
I'll second for you.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Burton.
Oh, you don't want a roof?
No, I don't necessarily want to.
Okay. Move by Mr. Williams, second by Mr. Burton. Mr. Chairman.
He likes
Once
it open.
Again, a motion for public works.
Odor mitigation.
I'll move it.
Okay, obviously, we can't get this passed.
I'll move it.
Mr. Rogowski, I'll second Mr. Rogowski's motion.
Is there any other discussion on this item? All in favor of both committees?
Aye.
Opposed? Item is approved.
Thank you very much.
All right, we have the county attorney back, and as promised, we'll bring him right up.
$5 million to do this. All he's doing is raising his taxes. I mean, we always anti taxes, but it's very quick to take.
Why would you want to come
I hope you have when you come back to the county attorney.
You like flushing your toilet. That's right. Your answer.
All right, if we may, please.
Sorry.
In the condition of time and respective county attorney.
I'm going to pass around Rule 1.7. Under Rule 1.7, Subdivision B3, it's an absolute prohibition. Attorney may not represent a client in a litigated matter where there's another client in the action. So it's prohibited whether there's consent or not.
And Mr. Williams.
Just have a few questions because I've read that section also, and there are some cases on that section specifically. It says, and I'm going to read the rule, it says that the representation does not involve the assertion of a claim by one client against another client represented by the lawyer. in the same litigation or in a or other proceedings before a tribunal. Once the county attorney is not representing the Board of Legislators, so they're not, this situation occurs, applies to situations where the lawyer is representing two clients. In other words, that have differing interests, basically. Since the county attorney is not representing the Board of Legislators, then this section would not apply. The lawyer has to be representing the client.
That's completely wrong. Completely wrong. And this is so plain on its face that there's no issue and there's no discussion. It's a conflict of interest, current clients. The Board of Legislators is a current client.
The county attorney looked at the cases under differing interests and interpreted this particular provision because there are cases.
I can read the provision and I can see that there's a prohibition for an attorney, for any attorney. It's not even remotely ambiguous in any respect. It says that the representation does not involve an assertion by a claim, by one client, say, Board of Legislators, against another client, the county executive, represented by the lawyer in the same litigation.
Right. But who is the county attorney representing as the lawyer?
Well, you're suggesting I represent one side or the other. It doesn't matter which side I would represent. No. It would be a violation.
No, it's represented by the lawyer in the same litigation.
So whichever side I represented, it would be a violation?
No, because if you read it that way, then there would absolutely be no exceptions to Rule 1.7, and there is an exception.
Well, there's an exception except for litigation. Item number 3 eliminates litigation. If it was a transactional situation, such as a contract, sometimes lawyers do represent two parties to a contract where you meet the other criteria.
Right.
That's not possible in litigation. That's what this rule says.
Well, but you are not representing two parties. That's my point. In that
doesn't
you are
matter.
Because the Board of Legislators represents has their own attorney, and the county executive has another attorney. So you're not representing the same party. You're not representing conflicting parties. This rule is where you are representing conflicting parties.
Yeah, those conflicting claims. The claim made by one party.
No, I agree with that. The claim, obviously, there's a claim being asserted.
The representation would involve the assertion by a claim by one client against another client.
Represented by the lawyer. Okay, so the lawyer is representing both parties of whom have conflicting claims. That's really, and that is not allowed. But that's, if that is an opinion that the county attorney is giving, I mean, I think that opinion really should be given in writing because these cases, this is clearly, I mean, I understand there are cases under this section.
Oh, really?
Yes.
What are they?
I can provide you the case. I don't have them with me now, but I certainly can. I would assume that it has been researched fully before this was brought back to us. But the point is that if you're saying that this particular provision restricts you from representing the county executive as well as the Board of Legislators, if this provision is, then how is it then that the county attorney is appearing right now in a case of which claims may be asserted or being asserted that could have or have differing interests, if that is
because the petitioner in that case is not my client.
Neither is the Board of Legislators.
What are you talking about?
In this litigation, the Board of Legislators have a different lawyer, right?
Board of Legislators, under the charter, is the client of the county attorney.
Understood.
In all matters, except with this conflict.
Right.
Board of Legislators is a client. That doesn't change because it's one matter where there's a conflict.
I only want to make sure that we understand this very clearly because what you're saying is that it's a client, and you're saying I cannot assert a claim against a client's interest because that would be a violation of the rules of professional responsibility under A because I don't fit under B.
Right.
Right? But yet, there was a case pending over which the county attorney's office appeared and asserted the claim that is adverse to the interests of, quote-unquote, the legislative client. So if you don't get out under this section, I don't see how the present representation complies with 1.7a.
Well, you're wrong. Because the petitioners in that case are not clients. I think you're twisting it.
No, I'm not twisting it.
Well, yes, you are.
I'm not twisting it.
You are twisting it.
Did you not say that we are your clients?
I did.
The board, right? Yeah, so how am I twisting it?
Because the petitioners in the other case are not my client.
I don't think I'm saying that. Let me just clarify the point. I don't think I'm saying that the petitioners are not your client. You said the reason why this can't work is because the county attorney represents the Board of Legislators in all respects, in all manner. That's what you said.
That's correct. Right.
Therefore, which to me, hearing that means that right now you are still our attorney, including this proceeding, and if you are saying that any claims that are adverse to the client, that you can kind of assert that without a waiver, then my question is, how come it's being asserted right now in litigation? Forget about the other client.
The Board of Legislators is not a party to that action. So where's the claim that the board is asserting? However, if there's a consolidation, which would be likely, and I suggested that in my letter to you, that I would be disqualified once there's a consolidation. It's very clear.
It says the representation does not involve
there's
assertion
no
of a
the
claim
case.
By... I just want to make sure that we get that clear, because I think that creates a problem under 1.7a. If you're saying that this... I think this section protects you in the current litigation, but if you're saying it does not apply, then there's a whole different issue concerning 1.7a. I don't think this section applies to...
Are you making an accusation?
No, I'm just interpreting the section the way you've explained it. I don't think it does, but if that's the way it's being explained to me, that this section, somehow or other, is one that's saying that you cannot, I think you can defend the claim, even though it impacts the Board of Legislators' position, right? I think that you can, because I don't think this section gives you the ability to do that, this provision in the Code of Professional Responsibility.
So with having this particular piece of information, part of the thing, again, shows kind of the inherent conflict on certain situations, specifically when it's between the branches of government, and it's certainly something that we have to continue to work on as we try to establish some lines where we don't want to be We don't want to be in a situation when there is disagreement between the branches on actions that have been taken legislatively or through the executive branch, that we end up having to go to outside counsel on every situation. We need to work through that, and this inherent conflict that is clear in this situation, that the county attorney has made it clear that there's a conflict in this situation. They also made it clear in Ms. Mia's letter that, you know, there's not a conflict right now unless the actions get consolidated. And he felt strongly about that. They said he didn't think that right now there was a conflict. One of the assertions, at least that from Mr. Williams' point, it sounded like, was that there may be questions about that. However, you know, taking that in consideration, it sounded like we were leaning towards the side of agreeing with the current position of the county attorney, which is, hey, you know, we can litigate with these individuals on the other action, and that we're willing to consider letting them continue this as they have done, you know, for the county in protecting the county's interest in this particular matter, and as we have outside attorneys already for the board in this matter, we could actually have some better utilizations of existing resources, since there are I guess, approximately 70 or so attorneys that work in the county attorney's office, we probably need to figure out how to do a little bit more wall building so that we are in a situation where the county attorney is not feeling conflicted, one, and two, that we don't need to go to outside counsel to have matters resolved that are matters of law. Right? So we have to figure that particular piece out. On this particular situation, it seems that with all that information on the record, that the county attorney is making it clear that he feels strongly that, you know, this 1.7 section is the applies in this situation. With the information that Mr. Williams put on the record as far as the conflicts and the inherent conflict in just trying to represent both branches of government, we're not going to resolve that particular issue at this point in time, but it's something that we certainly should have, again, continued discussion and certainly through Mr. Nona's committee as litigation. For this particular matter, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that we move forward and allow the county attorney at this point in time to have the appointment of Harris Beach as was requested in this particular matter, because again, it makes sense at this moment in time. We certainly have to continue to work through this particular issue as the conflicts are clear, you know, and again, we do not need to be in court with outside attorneys on these disagreements. Other branches of government seem to have their own level of representation for each branch. The comptroller, the legislature, the assembly, the Senate, and the governor, right? And then we have the attorney general that represents the state. So we need to go down that line and figure out how to do that level of separation, again, because we don't need to be in a situation where we appear to be spending money on outside attorneys when we have 72 great individuals that are in the office that we should be able to put up some better walls with. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would move that particular item so that they would have the ability, the county executive would have the representation that would be essential in this.
Okay, this item is only on budget and appropriations. Is there a second?
Second.
I'm sorry.
Okay, second by Ms. McCutt. Yes.
I just want to clarify quickly that my intentions of looking into this was to try to get the county attorney out of whatever conflict or situations that might arise, and to really have an outreach so that this contentiousness is going on between the board of legislators and the county executive office, that there is some level of trying to build some consensus. It clearly was not intended to in any way put the county attorney in a worse position, because as I said when I began, I think that he is in a very bad situation given the conflicts that are going on. I hope and sincerely hope that we find a solution. So, because I'm an attorney, and I would not want to be in the situation that he's often placed in, and I would not be one to try to put him in that situation. I hope that we find a way so that the staff of his department is not continued caught in the middle of the disagreements between the branches of government. These are professional folks, and they should be accorded that kind of professional, way to work rather than being placed in the middle of this.
And I think yes. Chairman Jenkins also highlighted. Mr. Ryan.
Yeah, this is kind of like just the tip of the iceberg. It's unfortunately, I know we all wish it was different, but there's a reality here, and unfortunately, the county attorney eats, sleeps, and breathes this every day that he is in the position that he is in. It's nothing new to the board dealing with County Executive Astorino. It was the same thing when the board dealt with County Executive Spano. Incidentally, it was the same thing when the board was dealing with County Executive O'Rourke. It's a very, very difficult problem. The party has nothing to do with it. As we saw, you know, for years, a Democratic board dealing with a Democratic executive gave us plenty of examples where party had nothing to do with it. It doesn't matter. It's a tough spot for him to be in. It is even more difficult when one or the other ramps up and actually moves legally as a branch against another branch. And it's I think we've seen the right decision made in prior years where this has occurred, that outside counsel is retained. I don't think that we would ever want to see a situation where we put the county attorney officially in a position of trying to, actually in the face, incidentally, of this, put him officially in a position where he's representing one or the other against the other in legal proceedings. Yeah, for me personally, one legislator, even if there was some way to allow him to do this, and I'm of an opinion, and been that of an opinion for years, that it is not possible for us to do that. But it would be a bad precedent, I believe. There's an ongoing working relationship that is tough for him to balance and maintain, given the what goes on between two branches. That's hard enough, and I think it would be an unwise role for us to go down to permit him, as we saw fit, to grant waivers to either do with this or not do this, depending on how we felt about it. All couched in terms of trying to do something that results in less cost to taxpayers. Unfortunately, we've ramped up, and this is not an item that results in less cost to taxpayers. It's another item of spending. It is what it is, and I don't think we should start to modify what the county attorney can or can't do based on this really extraordinary item that's going on here. We don't do this as a reason. Anyway, enough said. I would not favor it.
All right. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All
right.
Opposed? Thank you, ma'am. Thanks so much. And come. All right. Sal.
Yes.
All right. Item number two on the budget agenda, 3135, Bond Act, BLR2B, Labs and Research Equipment Acquisition. And that is also joint with Public Works. For the record, Dr. Hugh, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Dr. Asher from Lab and Research, and this time we are requesting equipment acquisition. There are several equipments that we are requesting are really old, like 10 years old. You want me to go one by one?
Please, just because we want it on the record, Doctor.
First is a Vitek 2, which costs about $100,000, and we only have one at the present time. This is no longer vendor supported, so if it breaks down, we have no way to fix it. That instrument is used in my microbiology division to analyze sexually transmitted diseases for public health. Our main customer in that is the public health. The second equipment we are requesting is pyrolysis gas chromatograph mass spectrometer system, which cost about $125,000. That also was purchased in 1997. So you can see it's over 10 years.
So the life expectancy of these units is usually 10 years, huh?
Yes. Okay. Yes, and the parts of these instruments are no longer available, so we request a new one. That is used in forensic science division to evaluate paint and plastic analysis, like broken headlight and things like that, in hit and run cases. Also, suppose you have an instrument prize open and you have a paint on it, and you want to check it out, things like that. The other instrument is a Scalar BOT nutrient analyzer, which cost about $100,000. We right now do have three analyzers, two of which cannot be serviced. They are too old. This is the only instrument that generates revenue. It costs about $100,000, and I do have a breakdown. Over 10 years, this lifetime, when we buy a new one, it will generate about $2 million.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. Because we do have ammonia.
What a good investment.
Nitrite, phosphates, things like that. Mm-hmm. And the last one we are requesting is ultra-high performance liquid chromatograph, which cost about $180,000. That is used in toxicology division of our lab, in DWI, and sexually assaulted
people. This one is also a revenue generator?
No.
No, right, because that's when we are proving stuff for the DA most of the time, which is intergovernmental.
Yes.
All right, members, I will not be pronouncing the names of this on this evening session, but I will highlight the fact that most of the equipment has reached its useful life and that it's necessary for the continued daily operation of your lab. Is that a fair assumption? Members?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moved by Ms. Meyer, second by Mr. Burton, and we have comments from Mr. Rogowski.
Yeah, just a comment, if those of you read the... found time to read the Journal News this weekend, or at least today's paper, the medical lab received the highest accreditation from nationally. So you're doing something right, and I guess to the extent we support you, it makes sense. If you want to expound on that, I didn't quite understand what it was, but it sounded like a good thing.
Well, I have toured the lab a couple of times with Dr. Hyland was still there. I know he recently
retired.
We
got a very high accreditation.
And it's amazing. I'm still amazed. So my support for the lab is unconditional, just because I know. And I have had the DA specifically and directly personally tell me how helpful it is to her to have you there to help her put her case together, especially in these sexually violent cases and not at all easy, but you're in the middle of a fight. So, a motion for public works is also we have Mr. Harkin moving it, and I
no,
can
they,
second.
No, they moved it. I had a question.
Okay.
We need a motion and a second for public works.
I'll be the last to move it.
Marty moved it.
I'll move it second.
Okay, we have a motion, Mr. Rogowski, a second by Mr. Alvarado. On discussion, Mr. Harkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I fully support this. I think you're a great example of what regional government does. If you know, we left this to individual municipalities, it would really be prohibitive. I have just one question.
Yes.
Not particularly, well, you alluded to this, but while you're here, I want to ask, if I may, Doctor. Last year during the preparation of the budget, we had some, shall we say, rather lively conversations between the prior administration, the budget office, and your predecessor about a business plan of driving revenue. Without commenting on that whole process, have you seen, and I know you identified one machine which will allow you to drive further revenue, have you seen new customers coming to you as revenue about equal? Is revenue up? Is revenue down for your services?
I don't have. These are the numbers I gave you that are from 2009. The one that generates the revenue, those numbers I gave you are from 2009.
Okay.
If you want, I can send it to you.
All right, that would be great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, you moved and seconded, if I may, for both committees, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Item is approved. Doctor, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving right along, and I'm trying to find my bearings here on the agenda. We're going to go to the next item, 3394, Sal?
Yeah.
3376.
33. Day camp. Summer day. Sleepy Hollow. I thought. We think that's been done.
An IMA Sleepy Hollow summer day camp.
Hi.
How are you? For the record,
Mary Kate Cavallaro.
Thank you.
Girl. This is an act for the village of Tarrytown for this past summer, July 5th through August 13th. In the amount of $50,000 to operate the Tarrytown Sleepy Hollow Summer Day Camp. 110 youth were served.
Members? Otherwise, a motion is in order. Again, investing in our